sagst noch müde, der Kopf ist so schwer, die Augen sind trübe, die Gedanken leer. Irgendwie schafft er es dann, doch aufzustehen, und er sagt sich ganz ernsthaft, so kann's nicht weitergehen. Nachmittags fühlt er sich immer noch schwach, nur ein Glas oder zwei, sonst wird er nicht wach. Beim Eingießen zittert ihm plötzlich die Hand. Naja, ist egal, vielleicht wird das interessant. Irgendwie glaubt er noch immer daran, dass er, wenn er wirklich will, damit aufhören kann. Irgendwie wird es schon gehen. Nur nicht heute oder morgen, irgendwann, man wird sehen.
Mood scale, 48 the right number?
48 the right number.
Yeah, I know we're fast approaching number 50, which is kind of exciting, but 48 is the number. And, you know, I think I have the same mindset as you want to come in. Last couple weeks was a little bit negative and wanted to come in positive. And I think I actually have a very good shot at doing so. And it's odd, but for some reason, my DVR didn't go this week. So
what are you talking about, dude? Like, you missed a good rod, dude.
So I didn't figure it out until, because I tried not to watch, and then periodically I might check while I'm watching Monday Night Football just to make sure it recorded. So I did catch it, but I only saw the last, say, 40 minutes. But it was weird.
It's like the worst 40 minutes. I mean, like the...
Well,
the good matches, but that last segment was kind of a throwaway. But
the thing cut off before the truck came out, so I only saw the part where Daniel Bryan and right when Daniel Bryan and Orton started getting each other's face, that's when the recording ended. So it was kind of like, you know, I saw what I wanted to see, which was the tag match with the Usos and the Shield, which was a great match. And then, but like, you know, I had a fear that I was going to see another bad Raw, and I didn't have to do that. So I got to see the part I wanted to watch. And then tonight, I was kind of amped up to watch main event since I didn't see anything on Monday. And main event was really good.
Yeah.
I finally got to watch the Real Americans wrestle because, you know, I have a strict no Santino policy, as I stated before. And for the first time in a month, they fought somebody else. The match they put on with the Primetime Player was a really good match. I missed watching Cesaro, dude. Cesaro was on point. Dude's super over right now with his giant swing, and I like his two-footed stomps a la Senshi.
I hate to kind of ruin your good mood, but the one thing that did happen during Raw, which is really the only segment that wasn't pretty watchable. There's only one segment I fast-forwarded, and I even watched a R-Truth trying to sell WWE merchandise. It wasn't as good as Dusty Rhodes' Ultimate Warrior sucker, but it was close. But actually, I watched it because it was just so comical. But all I gotta say is I'll say maybe five words. Okay, Santino, Kali, Hornswoggle, Elvis impersonators. And that's they all came out dressed up like Elvis because they were in Memphis, and even the Cobra had was dressed up as Elvis too with the hair and stuff. So I'm kind of glad you missed that because you probably would have come in because when you walked in my door, you're skipping in, you know, you're skipping in instead of kind of like the hey how's it going, because you know you and that's when they're going like oh there he goes all mad again and stuff and everything. So,
you were expecting me to walk in and go. Well, here we are, the mood scale. We got the idiot Santino who got liquored up and ran his mouth.
No. Actually, especially you coming going, well, here we are at the 48 mood scale, and we have to talk about some idiot wrestler.
who went and put a sock on his hand and tried to punch somebody in the chest.
but you missed some good matches. They had the Wyatt family came out again, and they had it's kind of funny that we're actually talking about this, and we're actually kind of going kind of Raw by Raw format. But Wyatt Family came out, and I think they faced...
sound like they did something with The Miz, is what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They faced The Miz and Kofi. It was a good match. And then the thing that kind of ruined the match was they beat Miz and Kofi, and then they tied up Miz in the...
In the ropes?
In the ropes. And you remember... you might not have been reading comics at this time, but you know who Mojo is from X-Men?
Yeah, yeah.
You know how his eyes are all, like, peeled open with his... Well, that's the way the Miz looked up against the ropes while Bray Wyatt was talking to him. Just terrible. I mean, I was expecting the dad to come out and, like, not do anything, you know?
Well, I was thinking maybe, you know, maybe they should convert Miz into the Wyatt family. He obviously has some kind of hillbilly background, so I think it might be a good fit to change his character up.
Well, I mean, if you kind of... if you take away the height and... probably like the broad shoulders. Rowan looks a lot like the Mrs. Dad. except that the Mrs. Dad has hair.
Well, you have to shave off that 3 feet of beard to see how many chins were under it.
But actually, the Mrs. Mom kind of looks like the other guy. So, I mean, I think we're going pretty good. And that's more of an insult to the... What's the other dude's name? Rowan Harper. Harper, yeah. And I listen. To all the ladies out there, I sincerely apologize. Harper looks a lot better than Mrs. Mom, so I apologize for that. So, so you had that segment. You had a pretty good, the Divas match was pretty good. You had the return of...
AJ?
Well, you had AJ and Tamina against the Bellas. So what's her name returned?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and, it's kind of funny, like, the Bellas never really did anything for me in the ring. Yeah, outside of the ring. They've done a lot.
They did a few.
Very, very, very nice, very nice. But, you know, I mean, Bree's come along, and I've kind of said that over the past couple movie skills. But, you know, I mean, she's respectable. She's not the greatest. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it just kind of shows, like...
What about Nikki? Nikki any better?
Nikki was kind of... Bree was doing most of the work, because I think Nikki's still coming back mm-hmm. from the surgery and stuff. And I think really kind of... When you first kind of look at the Bella twins, like, I think Nikki is the one that you look at first, because she's a little bit thicker. She's not as skinny, and then she has the fake breasts and stuff and everything. So she's the one you're going to, you know, like, when they were wrestling kind of before they started turning face and stuff, and before Nikki got hurt, she was kind of really the dominant one in the ring. And then Brie, you know, since Nikki's been out, has had to kind of learn her craft. And I think Brie's pretty athletic. She's not the greatest diva I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it really kind of shows, like, you compare her to Caitlyn. Like, Caitlyn is way more, in terms of her athleticism, is way better than Brie is. But, you know, you put a little character in there, and the character goes a long way. So,
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Breeze is a lot more athletic than Caitlyn. I think Caitlyn's a lot more physically imposing, but in terms of, like, athleticism, coordination, I think Breeze.
Bree has a lot of Rockin' Robin in her, Dean. You know, not as skinny as Rockin' Robin. Maybe as just as skinny, but I'm not trying to diss any one of them. Mm-hmm. I guess you're right. Like, Caitlyn has a lot more physicality, and her moves that she does is well suited for her. But I mean, Bree's pulling off, stand and drop kicks and drop kicks off the rope and stuff. And
yeah, I've been. It's the most actual work I've ever seen out of the Bellas in however long they've been in WWE. So I think they got a little bit of spotlight, and I think they're taking advantage of it. Again, I agree that I don't think they're the greatest. I think AJ's light years ahead of them. I think Tamina is too. I mean, Tamina.
That's a good pairing between the two.
Yeah, yeah. It is. And I like to see, because, you know, I don't think Tamina has a whole lot of personality to her.
What?
But, like,
as what are you talking about, man?
As the muscle to something.
The way she stands there in her leather jacket, that's not personality?
Hey, man, I like her, though. She can get it done in the ring, and it's best to have her paired with somebody that can talk. And especially with, like, as small as AJ is, it makes sense for her to have some muscle. And, you know, especially now that they've gone separate ways with Big E, if they're going to devote AJ to being in the Divas part, to me, it makes as much sense as anybody.
So look what you did right there. You didn't even watch Raw, but you perfectly segued into Big E. To me, that was probably the moment, like, probably the highlight of Raw. And not only that, but...
So I don't even know. I know he turned on SmackDown.
He turned on SmackDown.
And I don't know what he
did on
Raw.
Which was a good turn. So they were supposed to have... The Heyman, Ryback, and Axe were in the backstage. They're getting interviewed, and then Big E comes out of nowhere and says, "Like, oh, you think I'm marginal talent?" And so they have a match between Axel and I'm really kind of, it really kind of sucks that you missed it, because there's a couple things I want to talk about that match. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be Axel versus Big E. Mm-hmm. So, you know, of course, Big E comes out with, like, you know, we don't need three, I need five, and does...
He called for the five count?
No, he didn't call for the five. I'm sorry, for the entrance. I mean, the entrance by itself, because, I mean, I like Big E's entrance, and I am ashamed to say that I like his music, but... So he comes out with the powder and does that whole thing, and then... Dude, I totally mark for when he gets up on the ring and just starts beating his chest and going all crazy. Just tight, dude. So he comes in and the ring, and then Axel tries to, so you have Ryback and Axel in the ring, and Axel tries to jump him, and then Big E just like spears Axel, and so then you have Ryback come in, and so you have these two guys double teaming on Big E, but the guy's not backing down. Just like really good spots, like they would, you know. They would get the best of him, and then Big E would fight back. And
was it a handicap?
It wasn't a handicap. It's just that the match never started. Okay. So it was done the right way. It wasn't like Big E was Superman. Like every spot was like believable, mm-hmm. and he would fight back. And there was one spot where you kind of have some stuff on the outside of the ring, and then Big E Ryback holds Big E, like, you know, holds the arms and stuff, and, you know, Axel's sizing him up. So Axel comes in to hit him, right? So you're thinking, like, oh, he's going to move out of the way and hit Ryback instead. But instead, like, Big E just, like, is in the straight boot to the stomach, dude. Yeah. And then he backs up Ryback into the ring. And so it's just like boom, boom. And so, like, he's kind of standing over Axel. And then Heyman comes with a kendo stick and just, like, wails into his back, right? Doesn't even faze the guy. Dude. It's just perfect, right? And so then Ryback comes by with the meat hook and meat hooks him. And then CM Punk comes down with a kendo stick and just starts laying everybody out. And so, you know, of course, Vicky has to kind of ruin that moment by with her Vicky heat.
Well, if she showed up, she ruined the moment.
Yeah, scream at the top of her voice saying that's going to be a tag team match. So you didn't have, like, all the pageantry of CM Punk coming in with his music and stuff and everything, but the match was really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, the match was, like, I mean, it's a CM Punk match. And you know, the thing about CM Punk is that, you know, you know Big E can go in the ring. You know, Axel can kind of go. And Ryback, if he's put with CM Punk, can go as well. So you have, you know, you have this match and stuff. And then the thing that I really liked about it the best was it was set up where something – so Big E, you know, CM Punk did a lot of the work, and then, you know, Big E was going to be the House of Fire. And so, you know, finally they make the tag, and then Axel comes in, and then Big E does, like, this crazy... He just goes on a roll. Like, all of his high spots he does. You know, the body splash and stuff off the ropes and all that stuff. So he does that, and then Ryback comes in and tries to break that up, and CM Punk pushes him into the corner, right? So Big E does the corner, you know, does the splash off the ropes, and CM Punk just kind of looks at him, like, you know, bobs his shoulders, and then does the running knee to Ryback, and he takes Ryback out of the ring, and then, you know, you have the big finish and stuff, and so Big E gets the pin. So what I really liked about that was, you know, CM Punk is the main guy in there. You also have, like, Axel, you also have Ryback. But the way they're pushing Big E, because I even think, like, SmackDown, Big E was the one that kind of got the win as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Big E has a chance to kind of be the spotlight of that match. And so, you know, he does it. And then so Big E's music is playing while him and CM Punk are in the ring. And, you know, CM Punk, like, looks at him and, like, slaps him on the chest and stuff. And Big E kind of looks and slaps CM Punk on the chest. Just kind of nice, small stuff. You know, mm-hmm. he's built up the right way. And I always think CM Punk always makes, you know, everybody look good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Heyman's on the outside of the ring. And CM Punk decides to chase him outside of the ring, right? So it's the whole kind of, like, running outside of the ring. And, you know, and they're running through the crowd and stuff. And Heyman makes his escape. And the best part of the whole night was, you remember... did you ever see that movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme? I think it's like Bloodsport, where, like, Bolo Young.
Chong Li.
Yeah, Chong Li or whatever. And you know how, like, Chong Li does kind of, he pumps his fist up and down and stuff like that?
I know exactly.
Yeah. So CM Punk does that while his music starts playing, right? And the crowd, and everybody's going crazy. Like, there's, like, this, like, lady in the background doing the same thing. And all of a sudden, like, you know, CM Punk stops, and he sees, like, he probably sees, like, the coolest dude in the whole fucking arena, right? So he runs straight to that guy. And the guy's, like, kind of standing there, and he gives him, like, the five, you know, like, you know, not like a high five, but like, you know, just like the straight five slap, you know. Yeah. And so CM Punk slaps, you know, gives him the five, and then he grabs him by the collar and just like starts shaking him and stuff or anything, right? And the kid's like marking out, dude. Yeah. So like, you know, then you have everybody around him, he's kind of leaning back into him and stuff, and they're celebrating. But like, and you can kind of tell like the dude's mom was there, or his aunt or something. And so like this kid like had like a great moment, you know. Like, you know, we always kind of like when CM Punk does something on the shoot, you know, it's like either whether he calls out the fat guy in the front row or he turns around and decks a guy who he thinks is like punching him in the ribs. It's like this guy, like CM Punk pretty much made this guy's like flipping not only night but maybe life, you know. It's like CM Punk grabbed me by the flipping lapels and shook me back and forth, you know.
Put the kid over,
yeah. Nice. It was done the right way, you know. The kid didn't mark out, you know. I mean, he was cool with it, you know. You could tell like he was on cloud nine. But I mean, it's just like it was something that it's only like maybe 3 or 4 seconds, but it's just like the way this guy is. And I always, you know, my markedness for CM Punk always comes out. But yeah, it's good for business. You know, when I want to say that's good for business, that's good for business.
But, and I mean, it just goes back to the thing that he's the best that there is at ad-libbing and kind of working in the moment, right? Where a lot of the show, as we all know, is heavily scripted, and a lot of guys stick to the script and they got to think about, well, what am I supposed to do or not do? Like, he always ends up doing the right thing and in the right moment, even though it's, like, unexpected, right? You don't have to plan. You don't have to plan out to the nth degree with him, and that's what makes him the best.
And see, what it made me look is, like, what it made me do is it made me rewind it, like, 3 or 4 times, and I'm trying to figure out, like, if CM Punk, like, met him, like, beforehand or something, you know, because he's kind of, like,
looking... He was a plant?
Well, I don't think he was a plant, but the whole thing is, like, it makes you think maybe he was a plant, you know?
It works so good.
Yeah, it works so well, but, I mean, he's, like, looking around, and he sees this guy, and he kind of points to him, but he doesn't, like, straight point him. He kind of, like, puts his arm up a little bit, then he runs straight to him. So it's just like, little things like that. It's, like, it's kind of, like, he's not trying to do anything, but us as, like, smarks are kind of going, like, well, is this guy a plant, or did he meet him before the show and say, like, oh, hey, you know, I'm your biggest fan or something, and CM Punk recognize him? And it's, like, you just don't know. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of, like, the whole thing is, like, you know, when the Four Horsemen were on a roll, you know, like, they could pick people out in the crowd, you know, and or whatever it was, and they're really good at, like, fan interaction and stuff, mm-hmm. especially, like, Flair with all the ladies, like, screaming his name and stuff, really good at that. Tully would have, like, you know, Tully would do well in the ring, you know, do very good in interviews and kind of was able to, like, point out people in the crowd and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's just kind of that whole kind of natural, organic kind of, you know, it's not a John Cena... video showing him working out and coming back where it's like we're supposed to like him, you know. It's more kind of just a natural organic thing, and that's really to me what that Raw was just a lot of fun because all the matches were good
minus the Santino
yes, but you know, but you can fast forward that, you know, you can that was only like 5-6 minutes, and you know, the worst thing about that whole thing was that the guy that he beat was 3MB
McIntyre.
If it was McIntyre, I would have been pissed off, but it was the other guy.
Slater,
yeah. And I'm just sitting going, like, dude, I'm like, what the hell did Slater do to, like, piss these guys off, you know? And so that was really the only thing. But everything else, there were good matches. I think even the Tensai was able to kind of transfer Brodus Clay's trick knee to himself. And, you know, he got his knee hurt. They lost and stuff. So he also opened up with Ambrose and... Ambrose and Ziggler, mm-hmm. and was it Ambrose and Ziggler?
I don't know. I know Ziggler fought Sandow today.
Yeah, but I think it was it was Ziggler and Orton, and Orton won. Ambrose faced, I'm going to have to ask, the producer will tweet it tomorrow when he hears it on his drive in the morning. Ambrose lost. Might have been like Ambrose, I don't know, whatever, it doesn't matter. But the match was good. It was a good worker. It's probably it wasn't Ambrose and Daniel Bryan. No, man, not I'm killing myself. Thinking what it was, but it was a good opening match.
Yeah.
So and that kind of set the tone. It was such a good match that I don't even know who Ambrose faced. So.
Well, I mean, like I said, I missed it, so I was kind of looking forward to seeing some. Like I saw the Uso match, and I thought that was a great match. And pretty much, as we've been saying, anything involving the Shield is really good. So today I was kind of looking forward to main event. And, yeah, the opening match was Goldust and Seth Rollins. And they went 20 minutes of a great match.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it kind of...
And the finish was, like, really fast. And it's like, yeah, but it worked really well.
And it was, honestly, that was one of the better roll-ups I've seen. Mm-hmm. Like, because, you know, sometimes you get a roll up and you're like, oh, man, he can kick out of that easy. Like he had a really good weight transfer forward where I don't think Rhodes could have kicked out. But I'm impressed with Goldust, man. It's like, it's funny because, like, you know, I liked him in the Attitude Era. I wasn't, like, a huge mark for him. It took me a while to get used to that character. But, like, having him be away for so long and then seeing him back, I mean, I think, you know, I follow him on Twitter, and he's a pretty interesting follow. But, like, he's always talked a lot about how, you know, he was an alcoholic, and he's kind of overcome that, and he's in a good place in his life the last few years. And that maybe has something to do with the fact that he's cleaned up now and everything. But he brings an element, like an old-school element that a lot of guys, they don't have. And even though he's not the most athletic guy, he's not the biggest or strongest guy, like, he knows how to hit all his spots. He strings his moves together really well.
Yeah, he has tremendous ring speed.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, I like the teaming of them, but I thought it was going to be, like, a way for kind of Cody to shine and just kind of nice. It was a nice nostalgia act to see Goldust back again. But, dude, Goldust is every bit as good in the ring as Cody is right now.
It's not a nostalgia act.
No.
You know, because this is probably the best I've ever seen this guy wrestle.
Yeah.
It kind of, when he was wrestling in WCW before he got into WWE, and he was, you know, Dustin Rhodes, it was kind of the same stuff. Like, just, he was like a blue chip. I even think they call him the blue chipper.
The blue chipper.
Yeah. But he was really good. He was really good in the ring, and we inducted Barry Windham in the Hall of Kayfabe last week. He had a lot of Barry Windham in him. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of Barry Windham. And, you know, I'm watching him now. It's like watching him back in WCW days. And the good thing about it was, you know, we talk about him in the Attitude Era, but he was kind of a jobber in the Attitude, mm-hmm. you know, the Attitude Era. And,
well, he had a couple of runs.
Yeah, he did. But never in the ring. Like, he got over on Razor Ramon. Razor Ramon couldn't wrestle at that pace. So he kind of tailored himself to that. A lot of the people during the Attitude Era really weren't old school. They were kind of like newer guys. Mm-hmm. And now you look at the guys that he's facing. It's like, and that's the great thing about it, because you do talk about, like, you know, he brings an old school element. Well, he's able to bring an old school element because he can go against guys that can do the same thing. You know, and that's, I think, you know, the one thing we haven't talked about the Shield was they have a very old school element to them. I mean, Ambrose is just like a straight heel wrestler. You know, it's like he's like, if it's a video game and you have like a heel character and heel characteristics, you just slap the name Dean Ambrose and it works. Seth, you know, we're kind of like backing off on Seth a little bit, saying, like, you know, Reigns is really shining, which of course he is, and Ambrose is something else. But Seth is just an all around worker, just, yeah. You know, and it really showed in that match versus Goldust. You know, I'm sitting there going, like, you know, this is 20 minutes long, and my finger is kind of like, well, you know, because I knew you were coming over, I'm like, maybe I should fast forward it and see what happens at the end, but I couldn't do it.
There was no break in the action.
Yeah, and it was just, yeah, I mean, it was good, and I thought SmackDown was really good last Friday, and I thought Raw was really good, and then you have Main Event doing really well. And I think the thing is because the people that you want to see win are actually winning, and as much as RVD was good and he was fun to watch, it's like you had him, it was, to me, he was kind of like the luchador of WCW. You know, it's like, okay, it's time for the RVD match. And you knew, like, I knew that there's nothing's going to happen with this guy. You know, he's not going to become a champion. I don't even think he's under contract with him anymore.
No, I remember when he signed, I was reading some stuff, like, saw some interviews, and he's kind of tried to tailor his contract after that, which Chris Jericho had, where he's going to work when he wants to work and then be off when he wants to be off.
When he wants to smoke weed.
I'm sure that happens all the time.
Yeah, but when he wants to go on a weed binge and...
Yeah.
Yeah, a sushi and weed binge. And, yeah.
Or whatever. But, I mean, he's not going to be there, like... It's not like a regular full-time, like, he's going to be there at all times. So, I don't think that there's any kind of, like, contract dispute. I haven't heard anything like that. And from what I remember reading and interviews that I saw when they first announced that he was coming on, and this kind of sounds like what the plan was going to be for him anyway, so... And I think that's probably the better way to use him anyway. I mean, I think RVD would be very easy to overexpose this guy. And it was almost kind of, you were kind of getting to RVD. Like, when he first came back, it was pretty good, even though we're not that big RVD marks. But I think it was kind of you're getting to the point of RVD fatigue. And more in that they're trying to put this guy near the top, but you know he's not going to win any belt. and they're just kind of forcing them there in matches with Del Rio and stuff that didn't make any sense.
So what's the difference between RVD and Chris Jericho then? Because you can say the exact same thing about Jericho. But you love the guy.
Yeah, but I don't think you can say the same thing. It's like, first of all, Jericho's a much better worker, and second of all, they're not forcing Jericho to win all the time, right? They're not forcing him into high profile feuds with title matches like Del Rio and stuff that just weren't happening, right? Like he fought different guys, he put guys over, he won just enough to keep himself legitimate. And it wasn't like they were forcing this guy, like they're pairing him up with Ricardo Rodriguez, which makes no sense, right? Just a lot of stuff that didn't make any sense with RVD.
Well, it's funny that you bring up Ricardo Rodriguez too, because when the Matadors were in Texas or whatever, and they faced the Los Locales, mm-hmm. you know who the two wrestlers were?
I don't, but I know Ricardo was El Local.
Ricardo, that was him. You know who the other guy was?
Was it Tyson Kidd, maybe?
It was Tyson Kidd.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
I heard, because I had heard something at house shows, Kidd was working as like a masked luchador, but I didn't pay attention too much to figure it out. But yeah, that makes sense. I know that Rodriguez is El Local, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I just want to know how you kind of, because...
I mean...
You kind of like Tyson Kidd, but not... I mean, you're not...
He can work, but... Yeah. Tyson Kidd... there's only really two ways that I could see him being successful, and that's if they had a cruiserweight division or if they teamed him with the right guy. And my sense is that they'll end up teaming him with the wrong guy, and that's probably going to be Justin Gabriel. I think, and I was kind of hoping to maybe table this conversation for either the 50th or 52, whatever we decide is the anniversary.
Let's table it.
But no, let's get into it now.
Well, there's one thing I want to bring up, and then we can come back to that one. I want to know how you feel about the main event last match. I'm not going to call it the main event because I don't think it was the main event. I think Goldust and Seth Rollins was the main event. But I want to know what your thoughts were on Ziggler and Sandow. And I was actually surprised that Ziggler actually lost to Sandow, and I kind of want to know what you kind of feel about that.
I mean, I feel nothing at this point. I mean, Ziggler's in the doghouse. Ziggler's going to continue to lose matches. I like Sandow enough, and I feel that Sandow's been booked poorly enough that I don't have a problem with him getting over on Sandow. I mean, getting over on Ziggler. Ziggler's beat him more often than not. Doesn't make sense to me, but you know, Sandow should be getting booked a lot stronger than he is, considering that he's the money in the bank, which is pretty much the kiss of death at this point. So for Sandow to win a match like that, I don't have a problem. I felt like Ziggler carried the match. I mean, Sandow was good, don't get me wrong, but like I thought Ziggler controlled most of the match. I thought it was a good match.
Well, you bring up an interesting point saying that the money in the bank is a kiss of death, because if you really look at it, Ziggler was Money in the Bank for a long time, and he lost all the time when he was Money in the Bank.
Yep.
And we thought it was just like a Ziggler thing. And then, you know, he wins the title from Del Rio, gets legitimately hurt, and then Del Rio takes it back from him. Cena gets Money in the Bank, and he's not able to cash it in. And then now you have Dolph Ziggler you have Sandow kind of losing it all the time as a Money in the Bank champion. Do you think they're purposely trying to squash that thing, or...
I mean,
not out of the storylines at all, but you know,
it looks like the World Heavyweight Championship Money in the Bank is the kiss of death. It looks like it's just like some. It's essentially turned into the $1 million championship. I mean, the guy has it, but it doesn't mean anything. And then it's just a gimmick to carry around. It seems like with the Money in the Bank that goes for the World Heavyweight Championship, it's still pretty major. And even the fact that Cena lost while cashing in last year, I mean, it didn't hurt him in the least.
Well, because it's Cena.
Nothing
was that.
Right. So it couldn't have been the kiss of death for him, and it obviously worked out pretty well for Orton this time around. So they've maintained that the Money in the Bank briefcase for the WWE belt is still legit, but for the last 2 years they've done nothing but make the one for the World Heavyweight Championship look like a joke.
So I'm going to ask you one more question, then we can get into our table discussion. when the brand changed, when you had SmackDown and Raw as two separate shows, and you had certain set of superstars on SmackDown, and of course superstars on Raw, and then they kind of had the super shows, and then they kind of just wheeled the whole thing out where everybody appears on both shows. Do you like that? Because in the beginning I liked it. Now I kind of wish that
there was brand separation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because. I mean, the shows were better. I think it was better when they are separated, but it's stupid because, I mean, it's the same people. The whole thing's contrived anyway. So, I mean, the whole thing comes down to they're booking it stupidly. But I mean, they, for whatever reason, when they had the brand separation, they decided that they'd hold those belts at a little higher value. But they don't have it. You can't really blame it on brand separation. You blame it on the fact that their booking is stupid. But yes, I think when the brand separation was happening, it forced them in whatever their own little.
Well, I'm not asking in terms of what WWE is doing. I'm asking you personally. Like, do you want to go back to have SmackDown and Raw be two separate entities, or do you like the way things are now?
I mean, I don't. I mean, obviously, I'm not really liking the way things are right now. If that's what they feel like they have to do to book things correctly, then that's fine. I like the idea that guys are on both shows, okay? But just because guys go on both shows doesn't mean you have to bury three titles and a Money in the Bank. I mean, that doesn't have to be done.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely a learning curve in terms of what they want to do with that. I personally think that they have enough stars now. We always say, like, there's a lot of guys that we like that aren't getting time. And you can have, like, it's kind of, you can have the Wyatts kind of just control SmackDown and be the main storyline on SmackDown. Or the main faction, and then you have the Shield kind of be the main faction on Raw. I think that would work. They kind of had that with the whole when Nexus came out. You know, you had Nexus on Raw, and then you had Wade Barrett's group,
the core,
with
two R's.
Yeah, and but you couldn't carry it. You know, the core couldn't carry that, and then the Nexus once CM Punk left it, you couldn't carry that either. So, but I think now you have a right time where. You have two really strong factions. I don't say you have to just go like faction heavy, but you have a lot of guys. You have a lot of guys on the mid card that can be put up on the main event status if the brands were separate. And you could have the whole kind of corporate machine on Raw, all the guys that you know are gonna, you know, that they're gonna push. And then you can have kind of these like guys that aren't getting the push, and they can be main event guys on SmackDown. But either way, you know,
yeah, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. But they can do that right now. They don't have to brand separate in order to do that. It's just their own myopic outlook on how they have to book the shows at this point. So if that, like, I'll agree with you. If that what it takes for them to say, okay, let's just have the World Heavyweight Champion go on SmackDown and give them the U.S. title and make those belts mean something, then great. By all means, do that. And then it's kind of nice you could have a main event as your little crossover show where guys from both brands can wrestle. I like the way that they did it too before, where the tag champions could go on both shows, because I think that worked really well, and it was a lot better than when they had two tag belts and one was absolutely meaningless. And anyway, since I think we wrapped that up, I can segue right into what the topic that was going to get tabled was, and that was tag team wrestling. And the reason why I was thinking about, you know, bringing it up in a couple shows was because that was kind of one of the main things that we really harped on the very first show. Was the state of tag team wrestling and the direction that Triple H was going to go, and we were into it at the time, and it took off, and then it looked like he went away from it, and from stuff that I've been reading, they're saying that he's going back to it, and from what I'm seeing on TV, that's really the case. Aside from Santino and Kali, if that's really a team, there isn't really a weak tag team going, and they're probably about seven deep with really good tag team. I think the Shield is obviously great. I think the Rhodes are great. I think the Usos are great. I think
Primetime players
are really good. I think that as bad as the gimmick is of the Real Americans, those two guys are a really good team. Matadors are doing really well right now too. And then if you look at it, pretty much the worst team they have is Tons of Funk, which isn't a terrible team. I mean, still a bad gimmick.
Well, yeah, you have 3MB, too. I mean, 3MB is probably the worst team.
And I didn't even mention the Wyatts. So that's like eight or nine teams right there. When's the last time that there was eight or nine tag teams that
legitimate
tag teams. I mean, you got to probably go 15 years back.
So it's kind of funny that you're bringing up 15 years back because, you know, with me reading the Bret Hart book, and I've stated this for probably about the past three podcasts or whatever that I've been reading his book, you know, to kind of go real fast, Bret Hart's book is probably the best book out there, like better than Flair's, better than Chris Jericho's, just a really good book. And you're kind of he was talking about kind of, you know, especially kind of going back and watching the Rivalries DVD with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and saying how, like, Hart Foundation and the Rockers, how they were starting to kind of be in the main event. What you really kind of watch in Raw now, it's always a tag team that's, like, in the main event most of the time now. And I think a lot of that has to do with The Shield, because The Shield is tailor-made to be a tag team. I think it kind of fell off a little bit when you had I like Brian. I like Team Hell No. I really liked him, but at the same time, you knew that both of these guys, they're creating both. They put both these guys together to make them kind of separate stars and have one, you know, both of them kind of take off. And when Kane was still wrestling, he was kind of taking off as a singles guy after Team Hell No finished. And so that whole dynamic of them not being a real team, I think, really hurt the tag team division. And once you brought The Shield back and The Shield was dominating and doing really good tag team moves and tag team matches, I think that really brought it back. And then, you know, they give the Usos a chance. And they let the Usos, like, start winning. Like, before, like, all these tag teams were just they're all jobbing tag teams. Now you have, like, you know, you don't know who's going to win or lose. Like, tonight, on Wednesday, Primetime Players, they lost. Mm-hmm. And Primetime Players have been winning the whole time. And now the Americans are getting a little run, and they're beating everybody. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have, you have, like, the bottom kind of four or five teams winning or losing against each other. You know, the Wyatts are going to pretty much win all the time, unless they're facing Goldust and Rhodes. And so you have about three dominant tag teams, The Shield, Goldust and Rhodes, the Wyatt family, and then you can put the Usos right underneath them. When the Usos lose, you're like, well, wait a minute. You know, it's like, I'm expecting them to win.
Yeah. And this is, like, I didn't really, I don't think I was too eloquent with it last week because I was frustrated as much. And, like, while I said
that, I mean, you're not eloquent to begin with, so.
Oh,
I mean,
come on, man.
Come on.
While I thought, like, I said that the Rhodes team winning the belts was bad for business, it wasn't because I didn't think that they would do a good job with it. It was just I was just frustrated. I think that the best way for me to put it is it's frustrating to me that the Usos had been on the chase for so long and been so close, and then the only team they kind of carried the division, because as much as you can say Shield
division.
Because as much as you're saying that Shield was dominating, there was only one team that you could put in there and put up legitimate opposition every week, and that was the Usos. And for as far as they went on the chase for another team to just swoop in and get it, that kind of, it's just, I felt it was a little bit unfair. I understand why. I think the Rhodes, they have a lot more cachet than the Usos do. And as great as the Usos are in the ring, you know, they still haven't come up with, you know, they're not great on the mic. They're like, what their true character really is still kind of undetermined. And I can understand at that standpoint why you go with the Rhodes team over that. I was just kind of frustrating for the Usos because, you know, they've been on the chase for a while. And honestly, it's a very similar to what happened with Daniel Bryan, with the two probably most important belts that you have, the two belts that actually mean something. You have these guys that are going on the chase forever, and there just was no payoff for them.
But I think the match they're going to have, though, and granted, I'm going to admit, when I was watching Main Event, I turned down the volume because I don't want to hear Miz and I don't want to hear
Miz
Josh.
Miz is pretty bad.
Yeah, well, both they're both pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's actually more fun to watch when you can't hear them talk. But I think they're saying something about it's going to be like a three-way.
Yes, three-way.
Yeah, so, and as for the title.
Right.
So, I mean, the Usos can possibly get it there, so it kind of takes care of what you're... I'm not saying that they're going to win.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think they will either, but it kind of takes care of that whole thing where they're finally going to get their shot.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see them, you know, when they lose it, they're going to fall off to the side.
Right.
Because you're starting to develop rivalries
yeah.
that aren't centered around the belt.
Right.
And that's to me, that's what really works with this division right now.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think is good, I think there's a... even though I didn't like the Shield losing the belts necessarily, I think it was time for a belt to change hands. And the thing is, with the way that they've built this division now, they've been building a few pretty solid heel teams, but like they're never obviously going to go against the Shield, right? So now that you have a babyface team holding titles, like you know the Wyatts can come in and do something at any point in time, or they could have a pretty good program with the Real Americans, right? They've built up enough solid heel teams that there's some good opposition aside from the Shield to go against a babyface tag team championship.
Well, what makes the Wyatts good in that division is that they're not going against tag teams. They're picking out individual stars that are singles guys, and then you'll have like then you have something that you can do with Kofi, or you can have something that you can do with R-Truth. Mm-hmm. So you know you're doing stuff here and there where they're not really going after the belts, and they're still relevant within storylines. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what's really working with this division, and that's what worked so well with Raw was that. Yeah, you had Triple H come out and Stephanie McMahon come out. They carry the first segment. The Big Show is coming live via satellite. I don't know where. I think he was like probably at some bar with a bunch of bricks in the background or something like that. So you had that whole storyline there, which is fine because it kind of carries the storyline. And then you have the end of the contract signing, and you can pretty much fast forward what Randy Orton's saying. It doesn't really matter what they're saying.
That was pretty bad.
Well, I just fast forward it because it's like I don't. Right now, it's like that storyline, and if you want to say anything more about tag team wrestling, please jump in at the end. but you can kind of, you know, I fast forward the Orton one. I actually kind of stopped for Bryant because I wanted to hear what he had to say, because I already knew what Orton's going to say. He's like, I'm the best, or I'm the face of the company.
It was even worse than that. It was, you can't beat me.
Okay.
Yeah, except for he just beat you like 4 or 5 times in the last two weeks, but but he knows he can't get it done.
Yeah.
No. Well, we can stay on this topic slightly because as I didn't see Raw,
the one thing I didn't want to bring up though, real fast, is that CM Punk and Big E, that's the tag team. They're facing Axel and Ryback. So a lot of the big matches are tag team matches. And they're tag matches, and that's really the dynamic that it's going. And I think that's what really has kind of helped helped out this week because you had that at SmackDown, you had that at Raw. You're having these tag matches that are pretty much tag matches are carrying the whole show right now. And the individual matches right now really don't have the same firepower as I think a tag team match does.
Yeah, well, I mean, we just named off teams that are actually teams, but I mean, there's several that semi factions outside of that, right? Like Ryback and Axel, right? They don't use them. They don't bill them as a tag team, but I mean, they're essentially a faction right now. And that's a solid enough team if they decided they wanted to do something with them. And I think there's a lot of little groups out there like that. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of diversity in the tag team division right now, and a lot of directions that they can go with. I mean, I think they've always had a lot of tag matches, but it just used to be always like just these odd pairings of guys. But at least the pairings that they have now when they're doing these tag matches make some sense. And I think, every once in a while they figure out like how to mix some logic in there, and that always makes the show better. But what I was going to say, like kind of going off that ending segment, that was the one thing that I found interesting was, so since I didn't see it, I was following along on Twitter and trying to catch up on what people were reacting to. And there was a lot of heat online about Triple H's final promo there, and I wanted to see what you thought about that, because like when I first read it, I was like, Triple H is he's burying guys or whatever. That's pretty much what all the internet was saying. But then when I read like the Jericho tweets, just the first thing that came to my mind is, oh, this guy's coming back pretty soon, because I don't think Jericho takes that stuff too personally, right? And this whole like deleted tweet of, oh, I'm done with the WWE or whatever. I don't know. It seems like a work to me, man. So I don't know.
Well, every time he comes back, he says he's never going to work for the WWE. So, I mean, that's
the telltale sign, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I mean, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, he might believe that, but do you think it was just part of the storyline, or do you think it was something that that he was revealing that people should really get bent out of shape for.
Well, it was, I mean, first of all, it was inaccurate, because when Jericho had his run, WWE's, they already pretty much won the war. When Edge had his run, WCW is over, and his main thing is he's like, he mentioned Edge, he mentioned Jericho, he mentioned RVD, and he's like, if we went with these guys, we'd be working for Ted Turner right now. Well, when these guys had their runs, WCW is pretty much done. I just kind of find it funny. The thing I found funny about the most, and the thing was, you know, with Triple H, it's like, you don't know if this guy is shooting, you don't know if he's working. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, let's give him credit where it's due with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he says that, you know, Jericho was never the guy, well, he was the only undisputed champion that you ever had.
The first.
Who was the...
Triple H.
Was Triple H... Okay, well...
Triple H took it. He took it from him on the battlefield.
Well, take a look at what... Take a look at Triple H's run, too. I mean, he had... He was the heel champion... So you could build The Rock, you could build up Austin, whoever you needed to build up, but he wasn't the guy.
I thought that was the best line in the whole thing. That was Jericho's first rebuttal. It was like, Triple H was never the guy either.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, I mean, I loved it. I mean, I thought that summed it up perfectly. And Triple H, and that's the, I mean, I know Triple H has a massive ego, which is fine. Like most of the guys.
But you don't even know if he does.
You know he does. But most of the guys that get to the top or anywhere near the top in a business like that do, so I don't fault him for that necessarily. Okay, but I mean, that guy has to be in the spotlight at all times. He does, and whether it's best for business or not, he always believes that he is best for business.
But when he's in the spotlight, or when he has to, and this is why I'm kind of questioning whether that's actually true or not. It's because when he's in the spotlight, or if the aura of him being in the spotlight makes a lot of wrestling fans mad, then he's doing his job. You know what I'm saying? It's like he's like coming in. We haven't criticized Triple H because he's in the spotlight. What we've criticized Triple H for is that he shouldn't be the main heel. He should be like a helping heel to, like, say, Randy Orton. But he takes away all the heat away from Orton and having him be the main heel, which hasn't advanced the storyline for the past month and a half. And that's what's kind of, you know, you coming in for the past 3 weeks all pissed off about wrestling, saying that you don't have to watch anymore. I think he plays a large part into that. But with what he did with this promo, I thought it worked really well.
Yeah, no, I'm not. And I think I went back and I saw it online, and I thought it worked as a promo. I'm not bashing on him in this instance as much as his overall. I mean, just go back a year. I mean, he had to insert himself into a feud with Lesnar that nobody wanted to see. He always has to jump back into matches that nobody really cares about. And so, like, I'm taking the long view of saying this guy feels like he needs to be put in the spotlight. I'm fine with him in this character. I mean, he's doing like a pseudo Vince McMahon character, which the show was usually better when Vince was on the show at that character. Vince is just better at it than Triple H is. But at the same time, I think he still does feel that he needs to be in the spotlight, and he thinks that there's a lot of people that are out there that want to see him, which I don't think is necessarily the case.
I disagree with the fact that he thinks that there's people out there that want to see him be in the spotlight. I think it's more of a case where he feels that he needs to be in the spotlight because he has to play the heel role, that he himself... And maybe it's kind of where maybe we're going over, you know, different shades of gray.
We're arguing semantics over here.
Yeah, semantics. That's the word. No, see, you're the word man.
Yeah, but I'm not eloquent, though.
You're not eloquent. No. I'm much more eloquent than you are. I control the mic. People, I have to put myself on the mic because people want to hear me.
All right,
I think that he's playing this role because he thinks that he can push Daniel Bryan into a higher level of what he actually can be. Where we're saying, like, hey, Bryan should have had the belt 2 months ago. You know, he should have, if he was going to beat Randy Orton, if he was going to chase Randy Orton for six or seven months, then, and if he was going to beat Orton on a regular basis, then this guy should be the champion. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing where we agree is that Triple H feels that if he's the main kind of adversary and he's stopping Daniel Bryan at each spot, he's going to put Daniel Bryan in a higher place. And what I'm saying is that you look at this guy's track record. Of what he's done with The Rock, of what he's done with anybody that you know, he's given Randy Orton a shot. He's given Batista his shot. I don't know if he's really worked with with John Cena or not to give him the belt. But even to a small part, he gave Ric Flair, you know, a second life with him being the heel and letting Ric Flair kind of go against him as a babyface. So I can agree with what you're saying, but I think it's more, it's his ego, not for himself. I think it's his ego because he thinks that him doing this is going to make the wrestler that he's, I think he's doing it to like put other people over instead of putting himself over.
I can't agree with that, man. I think that if he really wanted to do that, he would let Randy Orton get over, or he would find somebody that can. It's like his whole thought that there's no one else that can get Daniel Bryan over like me is very ego-driven, I think.
I agree.
There's plenty of guys that people would be way more interested in
seeing. I agree, and I think that's where his ego. I think that's where his ego comes in. But at the same time, his ego is not to put himself over and like hold the belt or hold on a little bit too long like Hulk Hogan did, Cena does now. I think he really thinks that it, you know, him being the main guy, the main bad guy, and then Daniel Bryan finally in the end is able to beat all odds and beat Randy Orton, beat Stephanie McMahon, beat Triple H, beat The Shield, and that's going to put Daniel Bryan at a high spot. The whole problem with that whole theory though is that Cena's coming back.
Exactly.
We have to sit and wait and see. The jury's still out. If Daniel Bryan gets his run and he's able to do it by getting past Triple H and The Shield, everything that I'm saying is going to come to fruition. If not, then what you're saying is what is actually the case.
So come Miami, Florida, Sunday, Hell in a Cell. We will find out.
No, I think it's gonna slow play. I don't think it's gonna slow play all the way to WrestleMania, but I think it's gonna slow play at least to Royal Rumble.
So, are you saying no one's gonna have the belt until the Rumble?
I sure hope not, dude. I mean, I want someone to have the belt, you know, and we'll see what happens. I mean, yeah, I mean, Hell in a Cell, we'll see what happens with it, but I don't think that this storyline is gonna end at Hell in a Cell. And
do you think that someone will walk out with the belt after Hell in a Cell?
I don't know. No. I mean, because to tell you the truth, Cena coming back this early, and they're doing all the kind of the promo videos for him about how hard he's worked, and you know, and everybody's supposed to jump on his back and be all happy because you know he's fought the hard fight, but he's fighting for the WHC belt. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen until I know what's going on with Cena, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, well, this could happen, this could happen. I have no idea what's going to happen with that. And is that a bad thing? I don't think it is.
So, are you interested in purchasing this pay-per-view?
No.
And why not?
You know, if you'd have asked me a week ago if I was going to buy the pay-per-view, I would say no. And if you ask me why, it's because I'm not interested in the storylines. I don't like what Triple H is doing. I don't like the whole Big Show angle. I don't like the whole Daniel Bryan angle. But after this Raw, you know, you have a lot of questions out there. It's like, is it going to be Big Show? Is it going to be Big Show's time for a run? Or is he going to turn on Daniel Bryan? Or is Shawn Michaels going to turn on Daniel Bryan? You know, because they're setting up for Shawn Michaels to kind of turn. You know, Shawn Michaels is playing the great hero. You know, this and this. He's like, I trained Daniel Bryan. So the opportunity is perfect for the guy to kind of do a heel thing. And Shawn Michaels has done that. Whenever Shawn Michaels has been a referee, he's always turned heel or has done something that the fans don't want to do. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. I don't know what's going to happen with the Big Show. The Big Show, you can look at the Big Show saying, like, the Big Show's going to, he's setting up to become a heel. So I just don't know what's going to happen. But the whole thing is, the reason why I wouldn't get Hell in a Cell is because I have all these theories of what could happen. And everything that I think is going to happen, I don't think is going to happen. And I think it's going to be more of the same. And I don't want to drop $50 for more of the same.
Right. Yeah. I think the track record of the last two pay-per-views is pretty bad. And, yeah, that leads me to, you know, I'm selective with the pay-per-views I pay for, right? And I want to be sure that things look right and before I'm going to throw down that money. And the track record of the last couple indicates it's pretty sketchy at this point. But it could also be the big setup to something major.
Well, okay, so Here's the thing. What about on your end? Because, you know, if you buy the pay-per-view, you know I'm going to come over. You know Jason's going to come over, the producer.
Yeah.
And so we can split the pie three ways.
Yeah, I really don't see buying this pay-per-view, to be honest. But if it goes well, I could definitely see throwing down for Survivor Series.
I think we're going to watch Survivor Series. I'm going to call that out. We're going to watch Survivor Series, and I think we're going to watch the Royal Rumble, too.
Oh, I'm definitely going to watch. I love the Rumble.
Yeah, so I think the next tape, yeah.
All right, so let me see if this is what your prediction that you don't want to say is. So you say that John Cena wins the World Heavyweight Championship, and then in the match between Bryan and Orton, somehow Cena comes down and turns on Bryan, and they get the belt on Orton, and then the Authority has both belts. Is that where you're going?
That could be one direction, but what I really think, I mean, that's what I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm waiting for a John Cena heel turn. Because John Cena has to do one or two things. And I was actually kind of thinking about that today. And I don't know why I'm always thinking about this stuff. And I don't know why I start sitting there thinking like, okay, what's going to happen? But John Cena, his point of his career, okay? And this is why I don't think it's going to happen. Either he turns heel like Hulk Hogan did, or he turns heel like Bret Hart did. You know, straight baby faces that turn heel and have, I think, a better run that they had than when they were faces. And then while he's a heel, I don't know if I'll ever like John Cena, but if he's a heel and he's doing heel stuff, I'll probably start liking him. You know, I mean, just because same thing with, I mean, because everything is set up right. I liked Hulk Hogan. I liked Hulk Hogan when his stuff was fresh. You know, during the whole like rock and roll,
uh-huh.
Rock and roll wrestling, we both liked him. And then when we started seeing the same match for the past 3, 4, 5 years. We stopped liking him. The second that he turned heel, I started liking him. And you started liking him more than I did, you know, when he was a heel and he was doing the whole Hollywood stuff. And whenever he didn't have the title, he'd come out on Nitro and just do, like, take over the show and just do all that stuff. And we both really liked it. And this guy's doing a good job. So he's primed for that. But at the same time, in the back of it is that John Cena has not been an undisputed champion. And how can you have your face of the company for the past 10 years of what they say, this is your face of the company, this is your markability guy, how can you not have this guy become an undisputed champion when you've had Jericho as undisputed, when you had Triple H as undisputed, and Jericho wasn't a face when he was undisputed. I don't know if Triple H probably wasn't a face when he was undisputed champion. You haven't had a face undisputed champion. So I actually think what I'm really scared about is I think what's really going to happen is that Cena's going to win the World Heavyweight Championship belt. I'm not really sure whether he is or not. I'm not like 100% thinking that he is going to win it.
Cena?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Del Rio, dude. I think they're moving off of Del Rio.
Yeah.
I think there's no way that Cena doesn't walk out with that belt.
Yeah, but the good news about it is that I'm not 100% sure. You know, because you have so many different storylines going all over this place. What I can see is that, okay, so Cena wins, say Big Show turns on Daniel Bryan, whatever happens, or somehow Show gets the belt. I don't know what it is, but you're going to have like a major heel be the belt. What I'm afraid is that he's going to be the undisputed champion. I think that's knowing how Cena is and knowing how Cena has to put him on. I mean, I talk bad about Bret Hart being a mark for himself. I think Cena is 100 times more a mark for himself than anybody else ever. So I think he's...
Well, this book has really changed your perspective on life.
No. I still think Hart is a mark for himself. But I think Cena is more of a mark for himself. And I think Cena is looking at it going like, well, I haven't been a heel. It's kind of like Jesse with the pretzels. You know, it's like when Earthquake shattered poor Hulk Hogan's sternum. And Jesse's out there buying pretzels going like, well, I can buy one for $1.50. Or 10 for $10.50. Well, I'll buy the 10 for $10.50 because I'm going to get more. You know, so it's like he has to choose between whether he's going to be a heel or he's going to be an undisputed face champion. I think he goes for the undisputed face champion.
I'll pull an even better old reference. John Cena's sitting there with a stack of cash, and he's going, one for you, one for me. One for you, one two for me. And hoping nobody notices.
Yeah.
And hoping there's no one saying, wait, what the fuck? That's what he's trying to do.
And what is that reference?
It's Raekwon, man.
I know it is.
It's the chef.
Yeah.
On the one of the greatest albums that ever were.
The Purple Tape.
The Purple Tape. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Only built for Cuban Links. Yeah. But I think that's kind of my fear is that he's going to be undisputed.
Yeah. So yeah, basically he's going down the checklist, and the two things he hasn't done is been a successful heel and been undisputed, and he's got to be undisputed first.
Yeah.
All right. Do you think that undisputed run leads to him turning?
No, because I don't think he's smart enough to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're gonna, he's a cash cow. They're gonna cash in as much as they can, and then they'll find a way for him. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. It makes perfect sense for him to be heel right now, as compared to an undisputed champion. But you know, the WWE they're known for doing stuff that the marks like, and not taking care of the smarks. And they've never had a history of taking care of the smarks. Whenever they've taken care of the smarks, in about a month time, they reset it back to ground zero again.
Yeah. So very true.
So that's where I'm at with that. So yeah, I'm not going to buy it. I will follow it on Twitter. It'll probably be a better follow, more fun to follow on Twitter. And that's where I am with that.
All right. So we about that time.
We're about that time.
All right. So I went digging in the crates, trying to find a new group of candidates.
See, now this is why you're not eloquent, because you're not even saying what you're doing right now. You got to let the people know what you're doing right now. The hall of what?
The hall of kayfabe, man. All right. Everybody knows, dude.
Okay.
Everybody knows.
Your 49 followers, they know about the hall of kayfabe, right?
Yeah.
My 402 followers know about the hall of kayfabe.
Yeah.
I'm a mark for my 402 followers, you know?
Yeah. Okay. You're a mark for yourself on Twitter.
I'm a mark for myself, yeah.
Okay, so hall of kayfabe, I had to go because the reservoir was drying up, so I had to go look at a new batch of contenders. There's a couple guys I had in my mind, but as inspiration from your musical intro today, I'm gonna go in that direction, and I'm gonna induct.
Is it German?
Das Wunderkind.
Oh no, no.
Alex Wright.
Nah. No, dude.
Alex Wright, dude.
Are you being fucking serious?
Yeah.
What is Paul Roma doesn't want none of that?
No.
We
can't put Das Wunderkind.
We're not putting Das Wunderkind.
We had to dance, man.
Yeah, but I'd rather put the Vanilla Boy Wonder in. As compared, we can put the first first video game created wrestler in before we put him fucking Das Wunderkind.
Oh man, you're killing me! All right, fine.
You know how the fuck are you gonna put Das Wunderkind?
The dance was sick.
Because of the dance.
Yes.
Jesus Christ! Why don't you put Disco Inferno? Disco Inferno doesn't want none of that either.
The dance was no good.
Well, let's see who else.
You can put
Men on a Mission. They dance.
Don't. It's fine.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan, he had a little dance for a while.
I'm going to pick another dancer then. And this one I know you're going to approve of. You ready?
Well, that's a very hard thing for me to say if you want to. First, you're trying to put in Paul Roma in. I mean, I want to put Mike Steele in, but I'm not going to put Mike Steele in just because it's Mike Steele. I mean, how the fuck are you going to put. I'm ready to get out, dude. I'm ready to leave. I'm ready for a certain someone to come in and just take over the show.
No.
Okay.
No. Fine. You ready then?
I'm ready. Das Wunderkind. Alex Wright.
The Cat.
Ernest
Miller. The Cat. Okay. The Cat came in.
Yeah.
And he was pretty much a joke. But that guy, Adam, he was just kind of this, like, this faux martial artist gimmick, which I know he's a real martial artist, but it was kind of a weird gimmick for him on the show.
He, you know, he got a start, right? You know who he teamed up with, right?
Billy Planks? I don't know.
No. No. Tylo. I like Tebow. I like Tebow from, not Tim Tebow, but Tebow from Return of the Jedi.
The Ewok.
Yeah. I like how you get that, dude. I don't have to explain that much. No, he teamed up with Glacier in the beginning. Because Glacier was kind of the martial artist as well.
That's right. But then somewhere along the way, he went to kind of this, like, I don't know, kind of like, he got this funk music. He got the Somebody Call My Mama, which has been stolen by Brodus. But he turned himself into a pretty solid performer. His kicks were pretty sick. He had the feliner was a really good finisher, and the guy from when he came out with Glacier was kind of like this non-entity. To once he got his thing going, like I really liked watching the Cat. I thought he was a good worker. I thought he was pretty funny on the mic, and his entrance was solid. I thought he ended up being a pretty good worker in the end.
I think he was probably the last good WCW champion they had. before they kind of started trying to do the whole New Blood stuff and bringing back Kevin Nash or whatever it was with Sean Stasiak and Muppet or Puppet or whatever he was called in WWE. He came out with a decent looking lady. She wasn't the best looking, but he was champion for a while. I thought he had a good run as champion, along with Booker T. And it was kind of a case where you weren't really following up on WCW, but when the belt was put on the cat, you're like, okay, I can get with that. And then, you know, of course he comes out with James Brown and him and James Brown dance and stuff and everything.
He had a solid James Brown gimmick, and he had a good somebody call my mama, I just whooped this man.
and he was good on the mic. He never could make the transition to WWE.
Right.
They started him off as an announcer, and then they tried to put him in the ring, and it just didn't work for him. This is a fringe Hall of Kayfabe. I think he got something better, D. I mean, I don't know if I want to induct the guy. I mean, I respect him, but it's not one of these guys that I look at and go like, oh, he should have had a run as champion. He was a champion. The best thing I can say about the cat, two things that I can say really good about the cat, was when McMahon went to the last Nitro, and he started naming off all these guys about who they wanted to see in WWF. The guys that got the two biggest pops were Booker T and the cat. And I think the cat got a bigger pop than Booker T did. And that's really the only thing I can say about him. The second thing that was really good was he was in The Wrestler, and I really liked him in The Wrestler.
He was good in The Wrestler.
Yeah. So I don't know. Do you have one more guy in there?
Okay. All right. I'll pull another guy. All right. I'll pull two guys then.
Okay. So he's an honorable mention.
He's an honorable mention. Yeah. Okay. I'll pull two guys, and this can go back to our tag team little discussion earlier. And I know towards the end of his run, one of these guys' run, it got pretty bad, and for a while he kind of lost his mind a little too much roid rage. But in their time, I think the Steiner brothers were one of the best tag teams there was, and I think that they should both go in together. Even though they've had good solo careers individually, as a team, I thought they were really good. They're one of, at the time when all the tag teams were these big bruising teams like Demolition and the Road Warriors and stuff. These were two guys that were big, but they could actually wrestle.
So, okay, you're talking about the Steiners. I'm not going to shoot this one down, okay. But there is no way in bloody blue hell, I'm going to put Scott Steiner in the fucking Hall of Kayfabe. The guy that should go in the Hall of Kayfabe is the Dogface Gremlin, because I've always liked Rick Steiner, and I liked him better as a singles wrestler than I did as a tag team. I thought Steiner. I mean, because nobody remembers Rick Steiner by himself. They remember him with Scott, and people forget that Rick actually for a long time was a top level mid card guy when he was with the Varsity Club and stuff, and then he actually won the TV title back when the TV title meant something, mm-hmm. before it got dumped in the trash by Scott Hall, and then the TV title was gone forever. I would rather. Can we agree not to put Scott Steiner in and put Rick Steiner in instead?
I want to know why.
Because Scott got his chance, and Scott was a heavyweight champion, but the guy sucked. That's like putting Psycho Sid in. They're both so bad on the mic that us as wrestling fans, we cannot have a Hall of Kayfabe that has a guy that's so bad on the mic and was so delirious backstage. And the guy, he was in it for the money, you know, and he was all roided up. There was a time, probably about 2 months, where the guy was on top of his game. And when he was teamed up with Buff Bagwell right after he joined the NWO, and then when he came out, you know, with the bleached hair and kind of looked like a superstar Billy Graham 2000. Yeah. I thought that was a good run, but I just can't put that guy in.
Well, I thought that was a good run, and I thought his run as tag team with Rick Steiner was really good before he got all roided out, when he had that gigantic mullet. When the guy was super athletic.
Oh, but he was still roided out back then, though.
Yeah, but he wasn't crazy roided out, and it was in line with the roiding that everyone else was doing at the time, I would say. But the guy was super athletic for the size that he had. So I think he held on way too long and got a lot of pushes that he didn't necessarily deserve.
Okay,
but there was a time
Scott Steiner, when only only when he was with the Steiner brothers. So we're not inducting Scott Steiner himself.
We're not inducting the big bad booty daddy.
Okay, we're inducting the Steiners.
The Steiner brothers.
Okay, the Steiner brothers. Okay, the only reason why
you want the Dogface Gremlin in.
No, because I think Dogface can be in there by himself. I mean, seriously, like you look at this guy when he was by himself before his brother came in, he was one of the top three or four guys that were the most over in the company.
Yeah, he was super over. Yeah, in
WCW.
Yep.
And see, I think that's why that's more deserving. The only reason why I just can't, I don't know, dude. I'll put Scott Steiner in just for the Frankensteiner. It's okay. Frankensteiner. I'll give him credit for that because when he did that movie the first time I ever saw it, I didn't see the first time he ever did it. I saw the second time he did it. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that move, I was like, what the hell is that? And
from a guy that size.
Yeah.
And you know talking about the Frankensteiner when the guy's coming off the rope or when the guy was sitting on the top rope and he would jump from the floor or from the mat?
I'm talking off the rope. But the rope. Now we're talking about like moves like this, I don't know. I think there's a better guy out there. I think there's a better guy out there that really legitimized athletic ability in the ring. And it wasn't just like, I think there's, and it just wasn't like all these big lumbering guys that were just like doing clotheslines and stuff. And because I remember like there was some guy, it was my sister's boyfriend, and he was bagging on it. And it was like, oh, these guys suck, they're not athletic. You know, they just like fake punch and stuff. And we showed him a Blue Blazer match. And all the stuff that the Blue Blazer did, all the athletic stuff that he did, like the standing, you know, the standing flip to get out of an armbar and stuff like that. I would much rather right now put the Blue Blazer in than I would the Steiner brothers. I just can't put Scott in, dude. There's just something about it. I just can't.
Well, why don't we just finish off with Rick, and then we can.
Okay. So
Owen can get in at a time on his own because there's plenty to say about Owen.
Okay. So no Scott Steiner then.
If you must,
yeah.
If you will, yeah. So go ahead, talk about Rick then.
No, I mean, Rick. I liked Rick before WCW really took off. It was when you had WWE at the time, which was all cartoon and flash, and then you had WCW. Now, the Varsity Club was just a really kind of weak thing, but you had Sullivan, you had Rotunda, and you had Rick Steiner in there. So you have three really good guys, three really good heel guys. And Steiner was the one that shined out of all of them. And I think what really worked for this guy was, I mean, that name, you know. You had Rick Steiner, and then you had his nickname, the Dogface Gremlin. And how the hell did you come up with the Dogface Gremlin? And it always stuck. And he would come out with the singlet, he'd come out with the headgear and stuff, and it just...
One of the all-time goatees?
All-time goatees, but all-time in-ring ability, too. I mean, you know, his finisher was a belly-to-back. You know, it was a belly to back suplex when nobody knew what a belly to back suplex was. He was a legitimate wrestler, and he brought a lot of amateur wrestling into it, and that was kind of the whole Varsity Club gimmick. But the thing was is that he was fast and he had a lot of power, but you never saw him as like a really super powerful guy. But you knew that he can get in the ring with anybody and hold his own, and that's what I really liked about this guy was that he blended speed and then he had this power that you kind of knew was there, and when he would prove it, it was like you were just blown away by it. And I saw a lot of matches in NWA or WCW where he would just do great, not technical wrestling, but more kind of like mat-based wrestling, and then he'd just pull out these power moves out of nowhere, and the crowd would just pop. He was great at getting a crowd pop. And that to me, that alone, you would stop and watch a Rick Steiner match.
So would it be safe to say that he might be kind of like a precursor to what Kurt Angle ended up being? Definitely a lot bigger than Angle, but with a guy that had a lot of athletic ability but brought a good, he wasn't going to wow anybody with, like just this overpowering strength. But because technically he was so sound, he could pull off power moves on pretty much anybody he was going against.
Yeah, and it's a good correlation that you bring up at the same time was because Steiner, his character was kind of a comical character. Like, it's kind of like a guy that just fought, you know, and wasn't very smart. He kind of
right.
He played himself off as an idiot, mm-hmm. but he always got the win. He was kind of like a he was kind of like a Santino, pretty much. Like, he didn't do the stupid gimmicky stuff that Santino did, but as stupid as Santino is in the ring, and the pop that he gets for him being so stupid, well, Steiner pretty much was the master of that. Mm-hmm. And you bring up Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle, legitimately, as a shooter, probably one of the best shooters ever. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the best shooters ever in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, we can always give Kurt Angle that. But Kurt Angle really got over in WWE by being a comical character. He goes to TNA and he gets more straight-laced and stuff and kind of becomes a badass.
He had a lot of badass. We'll talk about Kurt some other time.
Yeah.
He had a lot of badass runs in WWE.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I mean, his whole stuff with Chris Benoit and stuff. But yeah, it's, I wouldn't say that you can, I would say that Kurt Angle, what I'm saying, why I like the Rick Steiner so much, Kurt Angle is way better at it. And you're right. So yeah, he was a precursor to what Kurt Angle is. Without the talent that Kurt Angle had,
right,
and without the mic skills that Kurt Angle had, mm-hmm. But at the time in the 80s, it was a perfect character.
Right.
He was kind of like an everyman, and he was an underdog all the time. Mm-hmm. And when he won, even like I remember when he won the TV belt, I remember when he lost the TV belt. You know, it's like he lost because it was a double pin, and he's like, well, I thought, you know, well, he had a shoulder up and he got robbed and stuff, and then. Right when that run was starting to take off, where he was starting to become kind of a singles wrestler, well, enter Scott Steiner, and Scott Steiner just took over. And even like when Steiner first came in and they tagged, and like I remember Rick Steiner saying like, well, he's like, you know, I don't want Scotty to be in this business and stuff, and you know, I don't want him to kind of do this whole thing of wrestling. You know, it's like I don't want him to be with me. I want him to shine on his own. But they made money as the Steiner brothers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, it was sad because by the time that they both broke up, they buried Rick Steiner. When Rick was older, you know, he didn't have kind of the youth or kind of the freshness of it, and he was able to get buried. And I think a lot of it had to do with the way WCW was booked. And I'm not saying that Scott buried him, but it was just the way the booking was. But for a while, he was one of the... I'd say he's like one of the top three baby faces in WCW when it was watchable and when it was like a different brand. When it, you know, you watch WCW to watch wrestling, mm-hmm. you watch WWF for the pageantry and just kind of the excitement factor. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to watch just straight wrestling, you'd go to WCW, yeah. And Steiner was one of those main guys. Do you have anything to say? Or
no, I mean, I probably saw more of... I saw a lot of them as a tag team. And then I saw a lot of the later Rick Steiner stuff when Scott was in there. So I didn't get to see most of that early run when he was a singles guy. I saw little bits here and there, but I always thought he was a good performer. I liked the whole barking thing when he went around. I thought it was pretty funny. And I always liked guys that were technicians. And he was one of the few guys at that time. He was pretty big for a guy that was technically sound. In the 80s, right? There wasn't a whole lot of guys. Like, most of the technically sound guys were your really lightweight guys. And, you know, not that they called them cruiserweights at the time necessarily, but in that range. And he was one of the bigger guys that actually had, like, the whole array of the suplexes and the technical skills. So, the techniques.
Yeah.
So I did like watching him from what I saw. And I, not that Scott's getting in, but I liked them as a team. I thought they were a really good team.
I like them as a team in WWE. I thought they were handled really well. And it's funny when you kind of talked about Roy did this and stuff like that. I thought you were going to bring up the Road Warriors. And I think the Road Warriors... Now, the Road Warriors were always the top team, and they won multiple titles. But I was like, hey, that's a pretty good team to put in, you know, a pretty good team. I think Hawk is a great guy to put in the Hall of Kayfabe. So you open up a whole kind of other bag of wrestlers to come that we can talk about later. So we're getting close to, like, minute 19, and it takes up a lot of space on our site. Do you want to try to talk about a match real fast that we remember, or do you just want to end it off here?
It's up to you.
Okay. Well, let's do this real fast. Let's see if we can do this in 5 minutes. I'll let you talk about this.
All right.
This match. Now, I got a match for you.
Okay.
So, and it's not a big time match, because we've kind of been hitting the big matches, and it's fun to talk about the big matches, what we remember, but it's also fun to talk about smaller matches too. So Goldberg doing his 50 win streak, main event against Haku. Remember that match?
No.
You don't remember that match?
No, I think I tried to probably block that out of my memory.
So
I know Goldberg beat him.
Yeah.
But I think just probably pissed me off, man. I mean, I remember them fighting, but and I think Haku was doing all right for a time, and then Goldberg just probably came out of nowhere with his two moves, and that was it.
Well, you know what happened. So you had, and I actually thought this was a really good match because it really, because the way they were playing Ming was that WCW booked him the right way. He didn't win a lot, but he never looked bad in the ring. And he was always the toughest guy.
Well, this was still at the end of that run because Ming had like about a year where nobody beat him, right? Was this when he still had that
streak going? It was tailored towards the end, but he was still like probably like the legit one of the toughest guys, kayfabe, the toughest guys in the company. And the other one we could bring up too is Hulk Hogan versus Ming on Saturday Night's Main Event. And that was a good match. But what happened here was that Goldberg had his start in the middle, and then Ming came, or start in the beginning, then Ming came in and pretty much dominated. He had Goldberg in the tongue and death grip. And right when he had him down, shoulders were down, and right when the ref was going to start counting, because he, you know, people think that, you know, that Ming would choke him out with the tongue and death grip. Well, it was actually a pin. And the guy, the referee would count to three and the match was over. Well, for some reason, he had him in the tongue and death grip. Ref starts counting, one, two, and he lets go. And then Goldberg came back. And I remember you're up in San Luis Obispo, and, man, you were standing up, you were pissed, and, like, you're like, ah, and you're, like, throwing stuff around and stuff like that. So that's why I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, see, that's why I think I try to block that from my memory. That, as you say it, that all comes back to me. Yeah, he probably got up at 2.5 and raised his hand and started walking around like, yeah, terrible. Oh, man. It made me want to think about Goldberg and shit.
But what I liked about it, though, was that Ming didn't come. Ming, you knew Ming was going to lose. You knew he was going to lose. You knew he was going to break the streak. But he still looked good in the ring, and it wasn't anything that Goldberg did. But it's kind of like the whole Macho Man thing, right? It's like you won, but you didn't beat me. Yeah.
Well, at least it wasn't a case where Goldberg was no selling all his offense, right? Like he went off of, you know, doing something stupid, but at least it was his own demise. It wasn't him. Getting no sold on a bunch of headbutts that had taken out everybody in the business for the last 15 years, right? Yeah, so, all right. I can give it that.
Yeah, so a little silver lining.
It hurts, though. It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. Okay. So, we are at Moodle Skill number 48. I am Bad News Ramen. I better have my donuts over here. He has one more follower, man. You're going to get 50. One more follower, dude. We can try to find you one more follower to get you to 50.
I'm sure if I just try it, I could do it.
And try. cut the lamb paper thin on the soft. Try, but you have like your followers though, dude. Like you have like, I mean, you have like the stripper chicks, but you have like one of them. She's like she's actually like a certified. What's that when you get the blue check mark? What is that called on Twitter?
Oh yeah, the verified.
Yeah, she's actually verified. I'm like, who the hell is this lady, dude?
And I think I got a couple verified and go-go dancers.
Yeah, a couple of, but the best one that you have is. Your follower, you have a follower, and she's a pretty good looking girl, and she's followed by CM Punk.
Yeah, that's she's going by like Annie Eel, but is Ina Lee.
Yeah,
yeah, she's one of my favorite follows. Like she's hella funny. I think like she's very similar to Punk in like that. Like she's kind of a grammar freak, but she's big on she's a big baseball girl, man. She's from Boston or that area at least, and she loves the Red Sox. And that was actually it's funny. I've been following her for a while, and I would tweet at her, and she'd respond and stuff. But the one time, and it was mostly all wrestling related, the time that I actually got to follow, I was at home drinking a beer, watching that A's Red Sox game, and she was at the Red Sox game, and she posted this photo of like the sunset from where her seats were, and then she said like, you know, like how she was happy where she was or something. It's like I'm watching the same game, drinking a beer on my couch, and I'm just as happy. And like right away, I got the follow back. You know?
Yeah,
she's witty, she's funny, she likes wrestling, she likes baseball. It's pretty good, dude. She's probably one of my favorites. She's probably my favorite aside from you. She's my favorite follow.
Yeah, you definitely have quality. And I'm not going to say that I have quantity over quality because I there's a lot of, you know, it's funny, like, I do have 400 followers, but there's about, probably about 10 to 15 to 20 of them that I really, really like and I talk to all the time. And then I kind of, you know, then you have kind of other people too. But every now and then someone will tweet me here and there. And, you know, when I do get a follower that, you know, like say like it's like a follow Friday and like we'll follow this guy. And then so I follow him, but he doesn't follow me. And I get people like maybe 2 weeks. If they don't follow me, I'll stop following them. Mm-hmm. And like this guy kind of came back out of the blue and he followed me, you know, and I was like, oh, hey, man, thanks for following. He's like, oh, no, he's like, you know, he's like, your tweets are funny. He's like, keep it up and stuff and everything. But and those are the kind of Twitter followers that I like. And I think she's a great Twitter follower. I haven't followed her, you know, because I'm not going to come in on your coattails and I was doing great as a Twitter follower.
Well, how do you think I got up to 49? I was coattailing all your follows. So.
You can coattail me all you want, dude. You know, I wish you could have 400, but you know, at $4,000 a pop. Not everybody can have it, you know, so that's good stuff, man. So MusiCale 48, we're two away from MusiCale 50. We'll talk to you after Hell in a Cell, and hopefully something goes down. But if it doesn't go down, I think it's kind of pointed in the right direction at least. I'm going to keep on watching. I'm not mad at the product like I was probably like 8-9 months ago when they put the belt back on scene and stuff. So better have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen, and we'll see you go. You got any parting shots?
I mean, like I said, main event was good. I'm kind of looking forward to SmackDown now. We'll see what happens with the pay-per-view, and hopefully everything goes on the right track to Survivor Series.
Alright, and we'll definitely watch Survivor Series, so the producer come ready to come down for Survivor Series. You're going to come down for Royal Rumble. I'll take my oldest daughter, we'll do some grilling, I'll buy the beer, and we'll be good to go. Run you.
Tags noch müde, der Kampf ist so schwer, die Augen sind trübe, die Gedanken leer. Irgendwie schafft er es doch aufzustehen, und er sagt sich ganz ernsthaft, so kann's nicht weitergehen. Nachmittags fühlt er sich immer noch schwach, nur ein Glas oder zwei, sonst wird er nicht wach. Beim Eingießen zittert ihn plötzlich die Hand. Naja, ist egal. Vielleicht wird das interessant.